Support for WILL comes from the Friends of WILL and from Busey, giving more than $1 million and countless volunteer hours annually to make a positive difference in our communities. Busey, your dream, our promise.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 18th day of September 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. And a bit later in the program, we'll discuss the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible. Along the way, I'll update you on what's been happening right here in Milan, Illinois, just to the southwest of the Quad City. I'm hosting the Illinois Farm Tax School today, and we'll discover why it is that farmers may want to report a higher AGI for 2018. And we'll do all of that right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org, willag.org. Oh, and don't forget that Commodity Week comes up in the second half hour of our program if you're listening on our home station, WILL AM 580, and on many of these radio stations over the weekend. It's already up there now on the web at willag.org. Our panelists this week included Bill Mayer, Wayne Nelson, and Kurt Kimmel.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're going into the 1 o'clock hour, and these are not settlements, but near the end of the trade for the day. December corn was up 4 cents at 356.5. The March at 368.5, up 3.75. The May at 376.5, 3.75 higher. In December at 392.75, about 2.5 cents higher. They should have settled close to that, as that's pretty much where they have been all day long. November beans, 4 lower at 8.46.25. January down 3.75 at 8.16.25. The March at 8.73.25. 3.75 lower, and the May futures down 3 cents at 8.86.75. November beans of next year at 9.12.5, up 0.75. Bean oil, one of the important spots, up 40 cents at $28. The bean meal down $5.40 at $306 even. December wheat futures of 5.75 lower at 5.18.25. July at 5.52.5, down 3.75. That, of course, for the soft red, the hard red in the July at 5.58. Down 4 cents. Live cattle futures in the October contract at $112.72.5, up 27.5 cents. Feeders in the October at $157.70 for 100 pounds, 42.5 cents higher. And lean hogs October at $60.32.5, down 92.5 cents. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media, Public Radio for the farming world.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist for the Illinois State Water Survey at the University of Illinois Prairie Research Institute. Illinois and the Midwest have been running hot so far in September. The statewide average temperature for the month in Illinois was 73.8 degrees, and that's 5.2 degrees above normal. Days at or above 90 degrees have been quite common this September, especially in central and southern Illinois, where we've seen 8 to 12 days with temperatures at or above that threshold. And runs of hot weather like this in September are unusual, but not necessarily record-breaking. This is about to change on Friday as a cold front sweeps across the state with rain ahead of the front and cooler temperatures behind the front. The National Weather Service forecast out to 14 days shows that colder than normal temperatures will prevail, with highs in the 60s and 70s across the state and lows in the 40s and 50s. The rains over the next 5 days may impact harvest, with the heavier amounts expected in southern Illinois, with potential amounts of 1 to 2 inches south of Interstate 70. The expected amounts are much less in central and northern Illinois. And a look at the 6 to 10 day and 8 to 14 day forecast suggests that Illinois will continue to be on the wetter side, with above normal precipitation and below normal temperatures. And the new outlook for October shows that most of Illinois does not have any increased chance of being above or below average on temperatures or precipitation for the month. This is state climatologist Jim Angel.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, supporting the next generation of farmers with the Fresh Roots Young and Beginning Farmer Program, offering lending assistance and learning incentives to equip today's newest farmers for a healthy start in their farming careers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. We're now joined by Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, to take up the marketplace. Of course, we're talking over the noon hour because I'm in Milan, Illinois, hosting the Illinois Farm Tax School. Hey, thanks so much for being with us, Mike. We appreciate you taking the time.
Great to be with you, Todd. Thanks for having me.
So let's start by talking about broadly what's been happening in the marketplace. There is some chatter, and we'll hear this on Commodity Week as well in just a bit, that there may be a low being set in the corn market. What do you think?
I think fundamentally, supply-demand-wise, we're well below where we should be. So in that respect, I think, yes, the market's found the demand, because the exports have started to really perk up. Year to date, we're up 25% in export inspections after this week's report, Todd. I think the problem is, and it will continue to be a problem until the wheat market takes out that next resistance, I think, of 525 in the soft red market. The problem will continue to be the soybeans and whether they continue to not allow corn to do much more than go sideways in this market. The yields are holding up very, very well in the beans east of the Mississippi River. I think there are some issues from client anecdotal conversations in Nebraska and also in parts of Kansas from what I've heard. But I think you have a situation where the ethanol market and the NAFTA portion of Canada not getting complete, we saw what a direct impact that could have on the corn. So between that and the soybeans, and the fact that another African swine flu fever case was found this week, you have the beans and the ethanol still weighing on the corn. So I think you have to have the wheat underneath you. I think a 525 support level is what gets you to carve out a corn low. Otherwise, we're going to have to probably sink down and stay down maybe for another 20, 30 days.
Sink meaning below where we are in different contract lows?
Yeah, I mean, I think I put out the recommendation when we were down around 340, 345 this week to get feed needs locked in all the way through February of 19 for the livestock people for corn. So I think that's a great value level to lock in. But if you're looking for a major low that allows you to rally, you know, 20 or more cents, I think that gets harder and harder without the help of the wheat.
Does the wheat have the push in it?
I think it will. I think what we have to see is a currency market that does not want to become a situation where fresh news spikes the dollar into a safe haven asset. I'm still worried about that. But, you know, I don't think it was any coincidence this week that the grain markets rallied finally with the equities markets when we saw that U.S. dollar and that index go to the lowest level since May. That's what we need to keep having. And then, and I think, yes, the supply-demand side of the wheat will start to work more in favor of the U.S. wheat export market.
Have you taken a look forward at the grain stocks report that's due out at the end of this month? Implications from it at all?
You know, only from a standpoint of what I'm hearing around the country based upon producers that are shelling corn and cutting beans right now and what they're getting from their elevators. And I think it's no secret that we are really tight right now at a commercial storage level. There's just not a lot to be found, especially east of the Mississippi River. I'm nervous that the report will show that and kind of knock us back a few steps. And that's why I think your basis levels probably aren't going to move much here before the stocks report. It's probably going to be your cash market and the funds and the short covering that gives you the excitement in the short term. So that puts you in a position, I think, Todd, maybe the most valuable thing we can talk about today for the producers that are harvesting right now is I think you have a positioning potential here where you can get some paper hedges in place or get some off the combine bushel sold on a futures rally in the soybeans at $5.50 an acre. Plus, for revenue on beans is very doable with some of the producers in Illinois and Indiana that are getting 70, 75, 80 to 85 bushel yields in whole fields, which that is happening out there. So this is the type of stuff I think we want to concentrate on between now and the crop report, and then have one eye on the idea that there is a minor freeze threat in the upper Midwest on the 29th and 30th, right around the same time. And whether that materializes, the weather consultants I work with, the primary one down in Florida I work with, says it's very unlikely that we're going to get that cold in North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, but we're watching it.
So just to clarify and make sure that I understand this, basis levels likely to stay wide and maybe even widen, in your opinion, as we move through harvest, even if we get a rally in the futures market?
Especially if we get a rally in the futures market going east of the Mississippi River. That's right. And that's predicated upon that stocks report showing us with a lot of commercial storage of physical bushels. I think the farmers did a much better job this year of cleaning out bins for 17 corn and beans. It's the commercials that I think we have to worry about. And the commercials psychologically don't want to buy one extra bean or corn given the trade issues that we're dealing with.
Is there anything on the soybean side in the products that gives you hope?
Yeah, the simple fact of the matter is we are starting to see a pickup in demand. We're selling into Europe like nobody's business, and we're taking it at the expense of the Latin American countries. And so we are seeing this shifting of the demand base away from Asia and China. Latin America is picking that up, and we're getting Europe. And so, yes, our prices are low enough for attracting demand in soybeans. It's just like we talked about last week. With African swine fever, we just don't know the demand side in China yet.
Yeah, so the other things that are happening in China, so we have African swine fever. We don't know what impact that has on the hog herd in total there and if that will really reduce the need that they would have for bean meal in particular as a feed ingredient that may be crushed there or purchased out of Argentina. Speaking of which, Argentina has been taking U.S. Soybeans to replace some of their bushels, I guess.
Yes, they have.
And then the other impending fact there is we have just a really large supply of soybeans in the United States, and it's going to be a monster-sized crop.
It is, and I think this is where it goes back to. It is until USDA says it's not, and that's what we're waiting to see, but that's probably 30 to 50 days down the road, and that's why it goes back to how much can the corn rally and what timeline are you looking at and why you need the wheat. And you hit it on the nose. The meal is the key. The Rotterdam market and the Argentine market brought us out of the hole when it came to the soy complex this week. And the idea that the tariffs against China of 10% instead of 25 let the market also find some commodity fund investment and some inflationary buying. But we can't call that a trend yet. That's the difficulty.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us.
Always great to be with you. Thanks, Todd.
Mm-hmm. That, of course, is Mike Suzzolo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You can listen again anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. You're listening to Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason in Milan today at the Illinois Farm Tax School. We're now joined by Eric Snodgrass. He's with Agrible to take up the weather forecast. Eric?
Well, Todd, we should definitely start off by talking about some of the heavy rains that were around Illinois this past few days, but really centered up in parts of Iowa and Minnesota, even parts of Wisconsin, and even back towards eastern South Dakota, where some locations right there along that region of the Corn Belt saw between 4 and 6 inches of rain. Northern Illinois got in a little bit on the action, but really when you get downstate, we've kind of skirted away from the heavy rainfall amounts. And even with the front that passed through early this morning, bringing in that band of showers and storms, really didn't put down too much. So across much of Illinois, it was just kind of hit or miss over the last few days, while other parts of the Corn Belt were really kind of rained out here. And when you talk about 6 inches of rainfall coming in a 3 or 4 day event on this parked boundary that was kind of just sitting there across parts of Iowa, Minnesota, like I said, back into Nebraska and South Dakota, that really is going to cause a lot of problems. So we're hearing some concerns about what this might mean for mold, certainly what this is going to mean for soybean pod swelling and some other issues like that. Now that the front's passed through Illinois, so it's worked its way through here on Friday, we've got a high pressure that's going to dominate over the weekend. And by the way, when that high pressure center slid in behind the cold front, we actually got some overnight lows last night. This would be a Thursday night to Friday morning that dipped down below freezing in parts of North Dakota and Montana. That's what we should expect this time of year. So that front's passed through here. And honestly, right here around central Illinois, we're going to have some rebounding temperatures by the time we get into Sunday and Monday. But maybe our next chance of rain isn't until Tuesday. And after Tuesday, I'm going to tell you, we've got three systems I'm watching watching very carefully that could come sweeping through parts of the Corn Belt, getting through Illinois, that could be bringing us multiple chances of rain. So the pattern's very active. Now, speaking of that pattern, right now, some of the big things we're watching. We had a tropical system, a tropical depression-like system that moved out of Mexico into Texas and Oklahoma. And this morning, it was absolutely pouring the rain in Texas and Oklahoma. And that's moving over toward Arkansas. It could certainly get some rain, some of the rain showers from that getting into southern Illinois. So we've got basically soaking rains on either side of central Illinois right now. But in terms of that active pattern, the big question will be this. We have dislodged the ridge that was sitting over much of kind of north central Alaska. And that ridge is what put all that cold air into western Canada that dipped into the Pacific Northwest. Well, the ridge has now moved east. It's now into the Gulf of Alaska. It's over parts of eastern Alaska. And that shoves that whole wave train pattern to the east as well. And as that all happens, what does that mean? Well, the cold air that's been building up in parts of Canada will be allowed to, with each one of these low pressure systems, to kind of be pulled south in the middle part of the country. So if you ask me to tell you what I'm expecting in terms of a forecast here, I think we're going to be on a bit of a roller coaster ride. And that's normal for fall. The overall outlook for October, though, I think on average, we're going to see cooler than average conditions. Now, I'm not expecting a massive cool down where it's just going to be super cold in October, but it looks as though because of that cold air in Canada and the shift in the flow of the atmosphere, we may have more cooler days than warmer days as we move throughout this month of October. So that's what we're looking at as we move into harvest. And I'll tell you again, if I was a central Illinois farmer and I could get in and harvest right now, I'm just thinking about the chances of rain coming through next week. First good chance, maybe late Monday night, but definitely into Tuesday. And then we got multiple chances after that next week. So very active pattern. So hopefully farmers will be able to kind of get in and take advantage of a few more dry days we'll have here in central Illinois. Now, I want to turn my attention quickly to South America. They have had some recent rains that really look like the Brazilian monsoon has got going there in parts of, you know, the Brazil's northern growing regions like Mato Grosso, regions like that. Southern Brazil is very wet right now. We have two big low pressure systems that have kind of left a lingering cold front over parts of Uruguay, parts of Paraná, getting into Paraguay, and even northern Argentina. So it's actually very, very wet there right now. So it's very interesting to see. But I'll tell you something else I was watching just the other day on satellite. You know, we're paying very close attention to what Brazil's acreage is going to be because we know that there is a lot of pressure on them right now to grow a lot of soybeans. And if the weather is favorable, they have potential for setting another record crop, both in yield, but most importantly in production. So I was watching some satellite data the other day, and oh my goodness, you would not believe the amount of slash and burn that's going on right now on the northern fringes of Brazil's major growing regions. Parts of Mato Grosso, parts of Rondonia, you know, this area, it's incredibly smoky because they have to stop burning by November 1st. I was talking with one of our professors, Stephen Nesbitt, who was saying they have a law down there that all that slash and burn has to stop by November 1st. So they are rapidly clearing to put in more and more acres there. So something I wanted to bring up to you from a meteorological perspective, air quality horrible right now because of all the burning just to get rid of some Amazon and get more soybean acres down there in the northern fringes of Brazil's major growing areas.
Eric Snodgrass is with Agrible. Yesterday afternoon, we recorded Commodity Week. Our panelists for the program included Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, along with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign County. We began with Kurt Kimmel. Kurt, this was an interesting week. It started with the president and the Trump administration levying another $200 billion worth of tariffs on the Chinese economy, and Wall Street simply shrugged it off.
Well, so far it has, and it's getting to the point, you know, it's common news. It's advertised ahead, and they're following through with it. China's actually going to start running out of products in general to put tariffs on, as we buy a lot more from them than they do from us. However, though, late in the week, we did see headline news that China probably lowered some of the percentage of tariffs to their major trading partners. I don't believe that's going to include the U.S. or not. But then, too, there's talk of China putting together a stimulus package for their country to help them through some of the pain that they're starting to see with this.
One of the other things that happened this week, at least earlier in the week, Wayne Nelson, was that the S&P 500 made new highs, the Dow making new highs as well.
Yeah, like you said, they're going on and everything's looking rosy as far as the rest of the industry. Actually, it's the ag industry that's taking the brunt of this tariffs here right now. And everybody else, actually, they have sort of strengthened some of the other things that are going on. But we've seen some other things sort of happening. We're seeing the bonds going down, interest rates sort of creeping on up. Will we maybe see that last interest raise? That's one thing we're looking at. The Brent is over $80 now. The WTI is over 70. That's generally an energy thing and also looks like it's going to be a little inflationary. And we've seen copper seen a 2 to 3 day rally here this week. Copper is generally an indicator of the economy and whether things are going to start rolling again. So all of these outsider macro type things, not the micro things, but the macro things, are looking very positive right now.
So we have a positive economy, despite the fact that we're in what I'll call now a trade war because of this last $200 billion. That would go against the grain of what most economists say, although we won't know until Monday maybe when the $200 billion actually goes into place. Well, how do you see this playing out over the next 3 months should nothing else change, just the $200 billion from the United States, another $60 billion from China?
Well, we definitely have the economy going great guns, and I think we're going kind of the opposite of what China is. I think I was looking at some numbers today, and China's really kind of having some problems in their economy, and their stock market's down about 17% in the last 6 to 8 months. As far as how it's going to play out, I wish I knew the exact answer to that. But I think that we're kind of getting to the point now where we've kind of got to the limit as far as what we can do from the standpoint, or China has as far as the retaliatory part of it. One thing I was looking at today is that, you know, our bean sales with this morning's export sales announcement, we're really not that far behind. We're really right on pace from what the USDA says. So I think we go along. I think we continue to sell beans. We're quite a bit cheaper. I think some $80 a ton cheaper than Brazil on beans and Argentina on beans. So I think we sell to other people, probably not so much China. And from the agriculture standpoint, I think we, as we go through the next 3 months here, I think we realize that, as maybe Wall Street did in the last couple of weeks here on the economy, that, you know, it's not going to be an extreme hurt to the agricultural economy, that we are going to be able to continue to see demand grow.
Are you surprised that the USDA numbers, at least to this point, are being met on the export side for soybeans? The USDA said, look, we're looking out. We've already put what we believe won't be exported out of the market into our numbers released in the September, even the August reports. Does this make sense to you?
Well, the function of the market was it went lower and stimulated demand, and we've seen demand from other countries. We've got basically the cheapest grain in the world right now, particularly wheat and corn and beans not far behind. So we've picked up a ton of non-traditional buyers. In fact, Thursday it was talked that China bought 5 cargoes from Argentina and Argentina bought 5 cargoes from us. But going into midday on Friday, it was up towards 15 to 20 cargoes that China bought from Argentina and Argentina was buying it from us. So there's some cat and mouse games going on. The world protein demand remains strong. We're seeing economic growth other than this bill that hit on there. We might be losing a little bit of economic growth in China here, but world protein demand's there. World livestock numbers are there. So it's just a shuffling around, and if we continue this trend, we won't exceed the export demand, but we'll stay close to it.
We'll hear more from our Commodity Week panelist in the second half hour of our program, if you can stay with us on our home station. Otherwise, do visit us online, willag.org, or you'll hear the program over the weekend on many of these radio stations.
Support for WILL comes from the Friends of WILL and from Busey. Through expert advice and tailored solutions, Busey helps homebuyers achieve the dream of home ownership. Busey, your dream, our promise.
It's National Pecan Cookie Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1756, John McAdam was born. He invented macadam pavement for roads. In 1816, as surveyor to the Bristol Turnpike Trust, He remade their roads with a raised carriageway to improve drainage. Stones were graded and laid in three levels, with the smallest stones crushed and laid as a top surface. By the way, the macadamia nut was named for him. In 1921, a huge explosion at a fertilizer factory in Germany caused 500 deaths. The fertilizer was a 50-50 mix of ammonium nitrate and ammonium sulfate, which together had a tendency to clump. It was routine to use dynamite and bulldozers to break up the clumped fertilizer, but this time the TNT set off an explosion of 4,500 tons of fertilizer, which created a crater 250 feet in diameter and 50 feet deep. In 1961, Earl Dixon died. His wife had frequent kitchen accidents, cutting or burning herself. Dixon devised a way that she could easily apply her own dressings. He prepared ready-made bandages by placing squares of cotton gauze at intervals along an adhesive strip. Dixon worked at Johnson & Johnson as a cotton buyer, and his home idea led to the mass production of Band-Aids. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, coming to you from Milan, Illinois today at the Farm Income Tax School. Bob Ree now joins us. He's been a perennial favorite at the Farm Income Tax School, and he works with FBFM in the state of Illinois really closely from the western part of the state. Bob, thanks for being with us. You started out this morning by telling the tax preparers, and that's who's in the room, that they might want to consider raising the AGI for their farmer producer clientele. How's this related to the new tax rates?
Sure, Todd. The tax rates generally drop for people from, for example, 15 to 12%, 25 to 22%, so 3 percentage points decline. But if you look at the overall adjustment, that's maybe a 10 or 15% reduction in effective rate. And so maybe we should be thinking about paying a little more income tax on a little higher level of income at these lower rates.
So AGI, of course, stands for Adjusted Gross Income. Another thing that this has to do with is QBI. Tell me what that is and how that impacts the rate.
The QBI is a new deduction created by the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act in December of 17. And in essence, it allows business income to be taxed at only an 80% level instead of a 100% level. So now if we take those two pieces together, last year a farmer might have paid federal income tax at 25% level, and now their rate would be an effective 17.6%. Again, a lower rate. Maybe we should consider reporting a little more income and helping reduce future obligations to taxes.
Yeah, that was the next piece for me, was why do we do it? So it's about future implications, and that brings me out to the five-year outlook and what those implications might be.
The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act rules are mostly five-year rules. They are in place just for a period of time through 2025, and I guess seven-year rules, but they are not permanent. And so in this intermediate time period, especially for producers who have backed themselves up with large amounts of accelerated expenses or deferred income, or they're perhaps looking at selling assets or retirement mode, gathering more income taxed at these now lower effective rates might have a positive effect on their overall bottom line. Accelerating some income at a lower rate often is a good strategy.
Are there adjusted gross income levels that this works better at than others?
There are. The tax brackets are graduated. They're progressive rates, so higher income is at a higher rate. But for several reasons, an AGI in the taxable income range of around $315,000 is one of the sweet spots. At that point, rates jump at a higher level, and some of the QBI deductions are more limited. So at $315,000 for a married filing couple or below is sort of the area that we'd be thinking about.
Anything else we need to know about this before I let you go?
Well, it's always a challenge to learn the new tax rules, and so I encourage farmers to visit with their tax professional before the end of the year to think about the right plan for their operation and family.
Aubrey, of course, is traveling on the Farm Income School, tech school this year, and will be in Champaign on Monday, where you've got a full house, 241 there, about 90 in the room here in Milan, outside of Moline today. Thanks so much for being with us. You can learn more, of course, online by checking out the Illinois Farm Income Tech School. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.